Damas and Herren.
Ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby open the general meeting. I'd like to welcome you at this annual general meeting of shareholders of Randstad Holding NV. We greatly appreciate that you took the time to attend this meeting. I would also like to welcome those of you who are listening to the proceedings of the meeting on the corporate website. I would now like to make some general announcements. I shall chair this meeting in the Dutch language, or I shall attempt to do so. I'm getting better. Gets better if I don't read out. It's these technical announcements that are the most difficult part of the meeting. Anyway, we have interpretation into the English language, and you can get a headset at the entrance of the room. We have microphones here at the board table and in the room. And the hostesses will be holding the microphones. Where are they? There's one over there. Should you have any questions, they will approach you with a microphone. The proceedings of the meeting will be recorded. And you're now kindly requested to switch off your mobile phones. I confirm that the notice to attend this meeting was published on February 16, 2012 on Randstad's corporate website and was also published in the Dutch national newspapers. And thereby, we have fulfilled the obligations laid down in the Articles of Association of Randstad Holding. The full agenda with the enclosures were also made available free of charge and posted on the website. The notice also specified that shareholders may submit written questions in advance of the meeting, and these questions will be dealt with and discussed at the meeting. No questions were submitted in advance. The notice also specified that shareholders who are unable to attend the meeting may give their voting instructions to an independent third party, A&T Trust Corporate Services in Amsterdam. At the table, the board table, you'll find the six members of the executive board, Greg Netland, Jacques van den Broek, Brian Wilkerson, Leo Lindelof, Robert-Jan van der Kratz, and Ben Noteboom. Subsequently, to my left, you'll find the other members of the supervisory board, Leo van Wijk, Rob Swartendijk, Giovanna Campori-Monas, Henri Giscard d'Estaing, Beverly Hodson, and Jaap Winter. We're also joined by Michael de Ridder and Sander Gerritsen of PricewaterhouseCoopers auditors firm. Please could you stand, gentlemen? There you are. Agenda item 2B, adoption of the financial statements 2011. And at that point, you can raise any questions concerning their opinion to the financial statements. Should you wish to ask questions to the auditors, I would request you to ask those, to direct those questions to myself as chairman of the meeting. The registration for this meeting closes at 2:15. After that, we'll be drawing up the attendance list, and I shall inform you how many holders of voting rights are present at the meeting and how many votes can be cast at the meeting. For the record, may I remind you that only shareholders may vote at this meeting. Furthermore, I would like to inform you that in accordance with the Articles of Association, minutes will be taken at this meeting. And I wish to appoint Jelle Miedema as secretary to the meeting. Could you please rise, please, Mr. Miedema? There you are. The draft minutes of the meeting will be made available within 3 months after the meeting has taken place and also will be posted on the corporate website. You will then have the opportunity to submit any comments to the draft minutes within 3 months. Subsequently, the minutes will be adopted by the chairman and the secretary. They will sign the minutes. Upon registration, you will have received a copy of the minutes of the annual general meeting held on March 31st, 2011. This year, we will once again vote with an electronic voting system. Should the voting system not work properly, we will proceed by voting by acclamation, which is what we used to do in the past, noting the number of votes against and abstentions. At the entrance of the meeting room, you've all received a voting handset, and upon registration for the meeting, you will have received a smart card. Instruction as to how to vote will be given by the secretary when we move to the first item on the agenda for voting. And with that, we can now proceed to item 2 of the agenda, the report on the review 2011. Under this item of the agenda, we will be discussing 2A, the report of the Executive Board and preceding advice of the Supervisory Board for the financial year 2011, and the proposal to adopt the financial statements 2011, the explanation of the policy on reserves and dividends, and the proposal to determine and adopt the dividend for the financial year 2011. First of all, however, I'd like to give the floor to Ben Notenboom, who's going to give us a presentation on the general state of affairs, followed by Robert Jan van der Kras, who will be presenting the financial situation, the financial statements 2010, the explanation 2011, sorry, the explanation of the policy on reserves and dividends, as well as the proposal to adopt dividend for the financial year 2011. The presentation of Ben Notenboom and your Robert Jan van der Kras will be held in Dutch, obviously. The presentation that you will be able to follow in the room on the screen will be in the English language, because this is the presentation that we will be posting simultaneously on our English website. It's particularly foreign shareholders and other interested parties that are following this meeting on the website. Ben, the floor is yours. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm just going to get a bit closer. In order to fill you in on what has transpired in 2011, it was a year of different speeds, so to speak. Growth in time, as well as in location, different developments in the US and in Europe. But I'll take you through the details in a couple of moments. The first half of the year, we saw strong organic growth. The second half of the year, we saw a slowdown. And I'll be showing you in a couple of minutes per country what the different market developments have been. Profitability per customer is what we're focusing on. We've always been doing that, but we've fine-tuned that, particularly field steering. Field steering is extremely effective and sometimes for investors perhaps a complicated way of managing a company. Field steering is based on the fact that we are trying to capture all the opportunities that present themselves in the market. So we do work with budgets, but we steer, invest, and save costs based on actual results. And we do this with the lowest possible units in the market. Let me give you an example. We have a branch with several units that could be secretaries in Amsterdam, logistics and healthcare. And then what we do is we look at the actual results of those units. Often we have two intermediaries working in the office, and when they've reached a certain level, we will add another intermediary. And if the results drop too low, we have to cut costs, which means that we don't look at the average of the branch office, but we look at the units. Healthcare can grow, secretaries can lose money, or the other way around. And if you really want to capture all the opportunities, you really have to manage matters at such a detailed level. So the only risk is that we take decisions. So if we implement the system properly, we will always adequately respond to developments in the market. Developments in the market is not the growth in general in the market, but our market growth. The market can shrink and we can land large accounts. We've got to invest in that. That's field steering, extremely important, and particularly in mergers, it's a system that we try to implement very rapidly in the party that we've acquired. And, of course, we also implement it in our own business. We've been able to gain market share in a number of large markets, not everywhere yet. An important strategic highlight is acquiring SFN in the U.S. I'll be commenting on that later on. An 18% growth of EBITDA, 600 million. Leverage ratio, also very important. This is our net debt divided by our EBITDA, so the cash that our company generates. And we have a target of 2. Banks believe that 3.5 is good. We don't think it's sensible. We want to stick to 2 as a maximum. And then we have a proposal for dividend. You're going to vote on it. Jobs Jansson and Kratz is going to address this issue. A dividend payment on ordinary shares of €1.25. The first indications are that it'll be accepted. If we look at the developments per country, I'm not going to dwell on this, but if you really want the details per country, you can obviously check the slides on our website. Last year, you will see that on average, we have 577,000 workers working for us, temporary workers, and after the acquisition of SFN, it has increased more than 600,000 a day. I still think it's an amazing number, but it's really true. Our own employees exceed 30,000 at this point in time because we, with SFN, we have more employees. And if we look at the average per year, well, it seems lower. Our overall market worldwide potentially is estimated to amount to 289 billion, but doesn't really seem to be that much if you look at the cutbacks that we need to make in the Netherlands. Top executive, 9 billion revenue. That is really the top of the top in business. Well, we hardly have any operations here, only in some new markets. We're doing this, we're engaging in this, because this is a line of business that really focuses on the relationships that the executive searchers have. And we always say that you have dogs and cats in business, and the cat remains at home, and the dog will follow the boss. In executive search, these people follow their relationships, and they work in partnerships, and so this is one line of business. Other two lines of business are very important to us. We're number 2 worldwide in total, but also 2nd worldwide in the professional segment after the acquisition of SFN. Comment on that later on. Our strategy. I show you this slide every year. It's interesting and boring at the same time. Interesting because it's extremely consistent. Boring because it never changes and hasn't changed for a long time. Per segment, we do show our profit targets. The professionals, you'll see, almost equaling 10% at the top of the cycle, and it used to say in excess of 10%. That's the only change that we've introduced in this slide. Just to explain for those of you who haven't attended our meetings very often, on the right-hand side, you'll find our growth drivers. What are the elements that have an impact on the size of our market? Well, we are in a structural growth market, and the reasons for that have been posted on the slide. The first one's clear. If businesses want to compete nowadays, they need to be efficient. The world has become flatter, and competitor need not be located at the corner of the street. It could be at the other side of the world. So flexibility is a must, a strategic instrument for businesses and organizations. So that is a growth driver. Goes without saying. Demographics. We've conducted many studies into labor market developments in the future. There's going to be a labor shortage in the EU, in the 27 EU member states, but also Japan because of aging, 120 to 67 million inhabitants, an enormous revolution, downward revolution. And in Europe, we had a survey, and the estimate is that approximately 2050, we will have a shortage of 32 million people in the labor market, which is more than 10% of the working population. But that is just the number. And, of course, if we analyze things in greater detail, look at the skills that will be required in the future, and what are the skills that are being offered at this point in time, the gap will be greater. We've almost finalized the study, which is a follow-up to the first one, in which we try to determine the qualitative gap, and I would venture to say that it'll be greater than the qualitative gap. Why is that so striking? If there's a low unemployment rate, which will be the case in many competency groups, people will be switching jobs more quickly. Job security. It's easy to resign because I know that I'll be able to find another job, so people will be switching more often. We will have to look at the services that we want to offer, which is why demographics is one of our growth drivers. Deregulation, We see that legislation, particularly in Europe, is becoming more and more flexible. And there's a European directive which stipulates that as per the 1st of January last, there are no limits for our operations. And in many, many countries, there are limitations and restrictions. We can't operate in government, which is 25% of the active labor. And France is open, Spain is open now, so things have changed with the change in legislation. And there are also certain countries where we can only second people for a limited period of time, and there are also countries in which there are certain rules and regulations as to when companies can hire temporary workers. That'll be done away with, and so we really have to continue to concentrate on our potential. So we see that in more and more countries, people want to work with fewer and fewer suppliers. Today, international contracts represent 25% of our revenue. I would estimate that 2005, it was 12%. Now it's 25% of 17 billion. So the growth has been revolutionary. How do we do this? I've explained this before. Strategy, building blocks, strong concepts. We stand and try to learn from each other and lay down the best practices. That's what we call concepts. And we use those best practices everywhere. The best people, obviously. The most important opportunity and limitation, perhaps, of growth, and we invest a lot of time and energy in management development because it is an important prerequisite for a good and successful future. And we believe in strong brands, not many brands, because the brands that you have to be visible, have to be recognized, and once you succeed in that, you see that your entire process becomes successful. Strategy has not changed. Why did we acquire SFN? We've often explained that our acquisition strategy is quite straightforward. We're not looking for new countries. And in our line of business, just as many other lines of businesses, the fact is that there's a 100% correlation between market share and profitability. In many countries, you have one branch, you won't make a lot of money. So we are represented in 95% of the world market in terms of countries. So we're not on the lookout for new countries. We want more of the same in the countries in which we already have operations. And we would like to have more professionals because that is really the part of the market that is growing structurally and has the greatest added value. SFN is a marvelous example in the US and in Canada, almost a mirror of our own operations. So lots of staffing and lots of professionals, and on top of that, market leader in outsourcing HR processes. RPO, we're number 3 in the US, number 2 in IT, number 3 in finance and administration, so seconding people in financial services, and there are many synergies. Just after the acquisition, we promised that we would cut $30 million a year in terms of cost. We increased that to more than $40 million. And on top of that, we have $10 million in tax savings. Integration is on track. Well, you can infer that from the increase of the synergy target. So to us, this is an extremely successful acquisition. If we look at the market developments throughout the year, on the right-hand side, you'll see the different colors, the different countries. Those are the market developments. It's not Randstad. At the bottom, you'll find the Randstad growth. Gradual slowdown in Europe, that's what it says, at an unusual point in the cycle. It has been unusual, this cycle. We've seen many, many cycles, always the same sequence. Starts in U.S., blue-collar administrative professionals, and then we see the same order in Europe. And in the U.S., this is indeed what happened. And staffing started to grow again. And in Europe, well, professionals didn't really start to grow because all of a sudden we were faced with something that we call the Euro crisis. I'll give you an example. We were playing football and all of a sudden they started to play rugby. So they messed up the entire game and that led to loss of consumer confidence, people spending less, etc., etc., a downward trend. and so therefore we haven't been able to see the ordinary development of the cycle. Now, to illustrate this, I can show you the quarters. These are the growth trends in the four quarters and for the full year 2011. If you move 70% growth to 2, you see that there's quite a lot happening here, and in some countries it's even more extreme, from double-digit growth to a small shrink. How about our revenue split geographically and per concept? We have a nicely spread portfolio. We have that because we have operations in many different countries. We have many, many different clients, and all these clients have different operations in different segments. So, therefore, we have an extremely solid portfolio of clients. And bad debts, therefore, is always very limited, between 0.1 and 0.2%. Even in 2009, it was on the low side. A very safe and sound portfolio of customers, and we're never dependent upon 2, 3, 4 customers. Sometimes we are in certain markets, very small markets, or certain companies, but never for the group as a whole. If we then look at the sectors, staffing 65, professionals 19, in-house 16. They grew again as a consequence of the acquisition. If we look at profit, where are we making a profit? We see a spread. Well, the greatest spread historically, if we look at the markets where we're really making a profit. And obviously, should we have had SFN on board for the whole year, the 11% of North America would have been considerably higher. That was my introduction. Now I'd like to give the floor to Robert Jan van der Kras, who will take you through the financials. Thank you.
Ja, goedemiddag. 2011, het staat hier mooi boven.
Good afternoon. 2011 is listed at the top here. That was an impressive performance in a mixed year where we went from a year with considerable growth to a year with little growth. We've seen substantial increase in revenue, and this is the first time that we carried over our acquisition from 2010, and the SFN has been on our books for 4 months in the revenue chart. As for the underlying EBITDA, which is the earnings concept we apply nowadays, because sometimes regulations are confusing, indicate that revenue's up 18% to organic $601 million. That's organically up 11%, primarily due to good cost control between revenue and gross earnings. Our earnings per share is up to $2.32 per share. That's up by 18%. One very important indicator in our company is the DSO, the number of days waiting for payment of invoices, is down from 55 to 54 days. Note that 1 day, in our case, ties up about $50 million in capitals. So reducing that period is useful, but if we reduce it too much, our customers will vote with their feet. As for free cash flow, it's up 41% to $435 million. I'll tell you more about that in a moment. And the Randstad financing, which continues until May of next year, has already been extended, and our timing appears to have been excellent. This is the firm's income statement. I'm sure you've all seen this. Revenue is indicated here at $16.2 billion. If SFN appeared on the books for the entire year, it would be about $17.2 billion, so about $1 billion more. And you see the item that was mentioned, EBITDA underlying. Why do we call this underlying? It's what reveals the firm's true performance. So there are restructuring costs incurred at the end of the year that should generate returns within 12 months to the tune of roughly the same amount. We've corrected for those. Those are the one-offs amounting to $48 million, and we've also listed the one-off integration costs of the firm. Now, a bit further down, you see reported EBITDA, that's post-amortization and impairment. 303 is deducted from that. The auditor is already smiling. He knows what's ahead, because you might say that's $125 million too much. each year, or at each suitable moment. You have to check whether the goodwill on the balance sheet remains compatible with the anticipated amount. And there's a complex analysis of earnings capacity per country in our spreadsheets. There's one misleading element in regulations, which is that the goodwill that we paid for Fadior, for example, you need to distribute that among all the respective countries. It was never our intention to purchase the countries. We wanted all of Fadior, including the countries. But if you distribute this where a country is doing better or less well than expected, you need to take something off for the country that's doing better than expected and add something for the country that's lagging behind expectations. Now, that may not be an accurate reflection, but we're doing exactly what we're supposed to, and the auditor did that correctly. There may be somebody here who has some influence at the in the Dutch Senate. There's a terrible proposal right now that we switch auditor firms every 8 years, and for our firm, that would be a very bad suggestion because we don't need any proposals for change. The independence of auditors is monitored by the supervisory board, and changing auditors would cost a lot if we had to do so every 8 years, and it really wouldn't benefit the firm at all. Well, I'm in touch with members of the House of Representatives and the Senate, so if I can help you, then I'd love to. We launched our appeal, and I see that this is increasingly likely, so that's good. I'm going to move on with the results. We're almost ready for the returns. You see the net financing cost at $17 million. In relation to the debt, that's not a huge amount. That's because Randstad opts for self-financing at a variable interest rate, and that beautifully hedges our results. Generally, interest rates are high when the economy is thriving and our results are better. During a slump, the interest rate is usually lower and our results are lower, and we don't want to pay such high interest rates. And generally, you pay less over the long term if you apply that policy, so that's convenient. And then you see tax $54 million down there, and that sounds fairly modest. That's because there was one item on the balance sheet, the value of the compensation of losses from the past offset by future earnings in the U.S. and the business profits has increased the chances substantially, and the provision has therefore been released, and that's how we wound up with 179 million euros. Now, a sheet about the geographic performance, and on the other side, the profitability. You see here that France accounts for the largest share of the revenue. If we include all of our most recent acquisition, North America will replace France, the U.S. And on the other side, you see that our return is higher in the Netherlands than in France. That also relates to added value. In the Netherlands and in Germany, we're exposed to risk of running dry. So it's not always comparing apples and apples. Sometimes it's comparing apples and oranges because we don't face that risk in France. And in the UK, the performance is severely pressured by changes in the government sector where we had relevant exposure, and quite a few adjustments are being introduced, which is why the return is rather meager. As for rest of world, that reflects our investments in different countries, China, India, and their Japanese acquisition, which is very auspicious, that's very promising. So much for the countries. Earlier we saw a pie chart reflecting that 16% of the revenue was in-house. This is about segment performance, and 19% in professionals at the bottom. And then we have some peak targets. If we were to see the standard economic situation, we feel entitled to growth for a few more years because that's the normal course of events, but things don't look that good at the moment. And then we see that our revenue in regular seconding, that's about, we're making 4% return with growth of 7%, and earnings growth is slightly higher at 11%. And we also see that the industrial segments, those were the main drivers. That's where the growth arose. And ordinarily, you have administrative, white-collar professionals, and so on. And then the breakdown is a bit more varied. That's lacking, except for the classic recovery we see in the United States. And then we're focusing heavily on client profitability. We need to ensure that we achieve good returns everywhere. And if we consistently miss that, then we pay some choices. In-house, we see 41%. That's a very successful segment because customers are going to be handed over from the branch to in-house, and the return there is 4%, which figures within a target of 4 to 5. So we're getting where we want to be there. In professionals, we still have a lot of work ahead of us at 4.3%, whereas our ambition is 10. The growth is clearly in IT and engineering, and the public sector in the UK has a major impact. Our exposure was 30 to 40% to the public sector in the UK, and that's now down to 20. In the Netherlands, we were well above 20, and we were even higher in professionals, and that's down considerably. Finally, we're experiencing good growth in permanent fees. Those are the fees we receive for placing permanent employees among our clients in the last quarter in the U.S. That was up by 44%. This is the Randstad balance sheet. It's not rocket science. We've identified the different items. We need the operating working capital to run the firm. That's about 4% of the revenue. So our business is therefore asset-like. We have to pay very careful attention. That's why the DSO has been dropping for years. When we merged with Vedior, it was about 60 days. And as you can see, we now stand at about 54 days. Our net debt is 1.3 billion. And the ratio that Ben Notenboom said of 1.8 times our EBITDA, that's comfortable. And if we do suffer a setback, we're well prepared for that. As for free cash flow, I mentioned this at the start. This is what we receive from operations, 528 million, and then after adjusting working capital, that yields 435 million in free cash flow. Some competitors manage at almost zero, so it would be nice if the investors and shareholders pressured to perform economically, because it's difficult to compete with parties that don't make any money year after year. And then in the second segment, we can with the 435 million, we can expand the firm and pay for financing. And we paid a lot for the SFN acquisition, so the debt increased by 403 million over the course of the year. We're focused on our financial position, and this shows the typical course of the net debt, which is always a bit higher in Q2 than in previous quarters. That's going to happen again now. That's a signal of what happens if you pay dividend. And we always pay out our holiday bonus in Q2 as well in some countries. It's saved up and then paid out in Q2. So that's a seasonal pattern. The orange line reflects the leverage ratio. That's a multiple of 1.8 times our EBITDA. In Q3, we nearly reached 2. That was carefully thought out in relation to the acquisition, and then at the end of the year, it was a bit lower at 1.9. Next, how do we make sure that our financing is all set? At Randstad, we start with the financing and then perform the transaction, not vice versa. And that really benefited us in 2007 when we announced that deal with Vedior, because after that, there weren't a lot of deals left to finance on the market. The market was locked up tight. Fortunately, we were ahead of that. In last July, we arranged financing and then signed the deal with SFN. And you'll see on the slide that according to this deal, the existing financing we had will continue until May 2013. Then it is supposed to be repaid and replaced with something that's already ready to the tune of 1.3 billion for the next 3 years. And it's already waiting for us. So at the time of the acquisition, we had 5 years to go, and we feel comfortable with that period so that we won't have any pressure to refinance en route, and we won't be caught between a rock and a hard place. We pay roughly 1% interest for both euros and dollars. The rate is slightly lower for dollars. Let's keep things civil here. Now, a few remarks about sustainability. I don't know whether you read the annual report. We're quite proud of this because we've allocated quite an extensive section to sustainability, not for, so much for your benefit as because we believe that several stakeholders appreciate this, and we notice that candidates looking at our company scrutinize this, and basically this is nothing new for us because our founder, Fritz Goldschmeding, indicated very early on that what we care about is people at work, and that carries over into all kinds of other important things, which means that we get people to work, and when we talk, we're not really talking about dividend or revenue, but about people at work. When we visit the branches, we count the people at work there, and this figures prominently in corporate social responsibility as well, and we've always been trying to find jobs for people. What's better, no job and simply waiting and seeing, or no job and getting a temporary job as a stepping stone toward a permanent job? That's our business. Now, 95% of our total cost base consists of people-related expenses, which means that we focus on that and we consider surrounding social factors less than our surrounding ambition is to shape the world of work, and everything that's part and parcel of that preoccupies us daily, including trying to influence deregulation to improve options on the job market and our own options as much as possible. Well, we've devised a framework. It's not rocket science, but we think it's nice to read. We consider four dimensions: customers, candidates, society as a whole, and our employees. And in the meantime, we make sure that we get our basics right, such as, well, you may be thinking about exhaust fumes and the like, but we think about other things because that's where the money goes that we invest in our company. And we've considered that from the Randstad strategy and market opportunities. And at that point, we believe that this is a fine framework to serve as an integral part of our strategy, and it lists KPIs based on those four dimensions that we aim to pursue and often track locally, but in many cases the definitions vary locally and so do the requirements, so we have to track them differently, or there may be some privacy regulations so that we're not allowed to aggregate them. But we do have these concerns on our radar, and we've already placed several KPIs, so they're operational. Some are not yet operational. This is not necessarily the end point, but it's the course we'll pursue in the next few years, and we need to verify reliability, and gradually we'll increasingly share these data with you. Well, for the at the end of last year and on 1 February, we tried to check our outlook. We went from 7% growth in September to 4% in December, and that means it not, because in 98 we were moving a lot faster. This isn't quite falling from a cliff, but it's a gradual slowdown in the United States. Business is still thriving, but last summer it slowed down and then picked up again. Growth per working day was zero in January compared with, if we look at and Q4 of last year, it was still growing by 15%. So that's a challenging comparison, and it sobers you up during the course of the year. And we see some acceleration in January in North America. Temping grew by 13%. Professionals grew by 15%. And our acquisition, which was at zero or negative, we reactivated that, and that's how we achieved new growth in January in SFN. This decline in January continued in Europe. There was 6% in growth in Germany, but those were due to CLO increases, and we were down in France and the Netherlands, so we need to keep on top of things. That's quite a challenge. Now, the dividend policy, that's the final slide. There's nothing new there. That's basically about applying the policy we've maintained for years. We aim for a consistent dividend that should theoretically boost the share price. We've had two bad years that we hadn't expected, and there was 27% shrinkage in a single year. That was a massive knock. We lost nearly $600 million in revenue, but our aim is to keep things steady, and that's why we're very cautious about financing at this point. We should be able to pay out €1.25, but that has to be within the range indicated, at least 30% of the adjusted net earnings, adjusted net profit. Why do I say adjusted net profit? Because we correct for amortization of goodwill, and a maximum of 60% of the profit. This year is 53%, and that will yield €1.25, and that's how we hope to continue. And that was my share of the presentation, and I'll open the floor for questions now. Well, not entirely. First, thank you very much, Robert Young. Before we move on to the Q&A, I'd like to say a little bit about such remuneration policy. For 2011, the remuneration policy for the members of the executive board was approved by the shareholders at that annual general meeting in 2007. Since then, the remuneration policy has not changed. Extensive information about remuneration policy and its application appears in the remuneration report on the corporate website, and a summary thereof appears in the annual report on pages 87 to 90. The supervisory board, especially its remuneration and nomination committee, monitored and discussed remuneration-related developments extensively last year. We commissioned Towers Watson to benchmark the current executive board remuneration with the international labor market peer group, while Focus Orange provided more substantive advice. We've decided once again this year to waive submitting any changes in remuneration policy to shareholders. Where relevant, we already amended the existing arrangements with the executive board in 2010, such as regarding the inclusion of the so-called clawback and the authority of the supervisory board to adjust variable pay under exceptional circumstances. This year, again, we will continue monitoring the developments. We have decided, however, in line with the existing remuneration policy, to increase the executive board base salaries effectively as of 1 January 2012 by 5%. As indicated in the annual report, we took this decision based on the aforementioned Towers Watson benchmark. We also considered changes in the salaries of senior management. Within Randstad, the base salary of Mr. Notenboom was increased by an additional 50,000 euros, as the benchmark revealed that the base salary of the CEO was well below the median of the relevant labor market peer group. After this extensive introduction, I would like to discuss agenda item 2A, the report of the executive board and the preceding advice of the supervisory board for the financial year 2011. I'm referring to pages 8 to 79 of the annual report. This meeting is being tape recorded, so before you ask your question, please state your name clearly and use the microphones that the hostesses will provide. Does anybody have any questions? Who would like the floor? We'll start with Mr. Rexman as the first. Mr. Stevens is number two. Oh, just in between, I've got the attendance list here. After counting the votes, according to the attendance sheet, we have a total of 104 shareholders present and 156,185,204 shares carrying votes represented at the meeting, of which 25,200,000 preference B shares. Altogether, they may cast 134,585,204 votes, equaling 76.61% of the total votes that may be cast, of which 3,600,000 on preference shares Class B. You have the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mr. Svarte. I'm speaking on behalf of the Association of Stockholders in The Hague. I'll limit myself to three questions in the first round and then see if I have the time left for a second round of questions. Speaker speaking off mic. Yeah, in the first round, I'll ask only three questions, and then I'll see whether there's time for additional questions in the second round. Speaker is speaking off mic. Interpreter apologizes. My first question is about the change in gross margin and the change in EBITDA. Over the past 5 years, the gross margin has declined from 22% in 2007 to 18.2% during the previous year. It's been a steady decline annually. Randstad paid careful attention to its own costs in the conversion ratio. How can we carry this over to the EBITDA? We see that the percentile decline in costs has dropped from about 17 or 18% to, I believe, 14.7% at this time. But this can't continue indefinitely. So my question is, how does the management feel about this steady decline of the gross margin? What are the effects? What can you do about it? That's my first question. My second question, Mr. Chairman, relates to the acquisition of Feedior. 2 years ago, I asked about the change in value thanks to that acquisition, and the chairman said we'll look at that at the end of 3 years. That those 3 years expire on 4 May, and I'd like to know what happened there, especially because in England and in Spain, there have been many Feedior-related impairments. The third one is easy for Mr. Van der Graats. He spoke very quickly about the risk of running dry in the Netherlands and Germany, but not in France. And if I'm average intelligence for this meeting, I didn't understand what he was saying, so probably 50% of the other people present didn't understand either. Please explain. I'll start with your last question about running dry. And that means that we have temps that we continue paying when they're not on site for an assignment. That principle applies only in the Netherlands and in Germany. And when that happens, you could also say they're sitting on the bench, but we call it idle time. That's an important element to manage properly. If you look at 2009, you'll see that the damage we suffered, so the risk existed, but the damage we suffered was fortunately very limited. I'll go back to your second question. Is Feedior now turning a profit? We're looking at EVA, which stands for economic value added. Are we recovering the additional costs on the capital we invested? And we always try to recover our investment within 3 years, and we planned for a quiet scenario in 2007. We assumed very modest growth. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. We experienced 27% shrinkage in 2009, so we had to scale back, and we said we're not going to make it in 3 years back. To remind you, at one point, Feedior was selling at 23 euros, and then it was 3 months later, it was down to 12 euros per share. So that sounded good, but then we ran into 2009. We're not out of the woods yet. The analysis is tricky because you integrate divisions within the company, so you don't know exactly how it's contributing, but we are monitoring it carefully, and we'll let you know more. But it's too early now to tell. We said it would take a few years of growth to bounce back properly, and I think you're also relating this to the goodwill impairment. 125 million was impaired. What's unfortunate is if you look at the surplus of the group as a whole, it's about 3 billion. But in two countries, namely Iberia, specifically Spain, and the UK, there's a deficit based on the math and the somewhat subjective allocation we performed in 2009, where you had to split the goodwill by country. And it was the total was a bit too high for those two countries, so we've impaired some of that. And now, your very first question, gross profit, that's a very understandable question. That's diminished from a higher level to a lower amount combined with Vedior, because the Vedior country mix was very different. And what we always see in our company is that the regular growth pattern is that we grow first in the blue-collar segment, which we love because often we can maximize efficiency in operating that. But then there's a somewhat lower gross profit in the next segment, which is the white-collar segment, and then you get up to professionals, so from 30 euros and above. And the gross profits are a bit higher in that segment, but the cost base is also higher. And then we get to the permanent placement search and selection. Those are the fees we receive for placing people in permanent jobs, and the gross profit is basically 100% there. Now, if you run down the list, the gross profit increases because the diversity of the mix does as well. We basically grew globally only in blue collar. In the U.S., there was more extensive growth, but not in Europe, and that's why the numbers are lower. Meanwhile, our selection of large customers and efficient delivery has improved, but we still have a ways to go. Mr. Stevens. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I'm Mr. Stevens from the Foundation for for Protecting Legal Investors. I had a question about this decline as well in the gross margin, but we're curious what happened the previous quarter, because we're heading for the end of the first quarter, and we assume you have some insight. And there was also, we'd expected that in this morning's press release, you would say something general about Q1. Now, as for UK, we're a bit taken aback because I asked about that last year too, and you said that you were doing well in the industrial segment, but now it seems that you have suffered some setbacks. What's the problem? Then you sold some of your smaller companies, and what surprises us is MyFo in India. Because you brought that one on board, you were very optimistic, and there were two ladies who had started that one up, and you were very optimistic about that. And then you went and sold it. That is amazing to us. Thank you. Okay, the last thing is a misunderstanding. It wasn't Mafal that we sold. It was a different company. The name escapes me. We still own that one. Mafal was the company in India that we sold, that we purchased via Vedior. And there was a very little section that offers training. That's the part we sold. We're still a proud market leader in India. We didn't sell anything major there, so don't worry. UK, we're working on that too. We're working on a new approach there, and that seems to be bearing fruit. We eliminated a lot of our costs in England. There were three areas where we made money in England. The first was public government-related, the second was construction, and the third was finance. Now, you know how all those three segments did. They didn't do very well. I'm trying to say that our organization was to blame, but those were the three sectors where we were making money in England. Those were our three cash cows, and all three are in the doldrums. As for the gross margin, I wish I knew the answer to that, too. It's March 29th, so we do have a general idea, but we can't issue a press release 2 weeks before the end of the quarter because we still have to wrap it up. And we said in January that the margin was no longer in decline, and we disclosed our Q4 results, and that's the information presently available on the market. Yes, you have the floor. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Martijn Huinen of SPF Management. I'm voting on behalf of the Stichting Spoorweg Pensioenfonds and the Stichting Pensioenfonds Openbaar Vervoer. In addition, on behalf of stated parties, Eminent and Ribbeke, I'll speak as well. The annual report clearly expresses the risks. It provides investors with good insights. Thank you. Randstad also disclosed the sustainability performance. Mr. van der Graaf told us about that earlier. The description of which quantifiable performance criteria relate to which targets is extremely clear. The firm has related the sustainability strategy more closely to the general one, and that's also commendable. I have a suggestion, especially in this day and age. Finding jobs for people is an important duty for Randstad. Quantifiable performance criteria that I don't see are the number of people that Randstad has helped go to work from a state of unemployment, and how many people have moved from temporary to permanent jobs as a result of Randstad, because the context differs significantly by country. Such information might be provided by country. Randstad defines very clear quantifiable performance criteria, but in the remuneration of the management, they pay them only based on total return for shareholders. We prefer a hybrid of different quantifiable performance criteria that relate closely to the quality of the firm over the long term. Finally, Randstad, compared with other firms, has a moderate remuneration policy. I appreciate this. The supervisory board has decided to increase the remuneration for the management by 5%, as well as the base salary of the CEO by 50,000 euros. The argument is that the salaries should progress toward the median. This modest and restrained remuneration policy is greatly appreciated. Heading toward the median has an undesirable aspect. Hans Biesheuvel recently spoke out in favor of a baseline for salaries, including for senior managers. VNO NCW Chairman Bernard Wienstedt also advocated the baseline. We will approve a discharge of the supervisory board, but explicitly question the relatively modest remuneration policy. Let's continue. Often we know those numbers by country. You can't compare them easily. We're trying to figure out a good way of tracking this, and you did catch us on that. We're going to make progress there, but we didn't have a suitable way of including them in the annual report. Thank you very much. We encourage that.
Eva.
A very brief comment on remuneration policy. Every year we systematically take a look at remuneration and we compare remunerations, and we do this through TARS parents, and we compare with our peer group. And I'm pleased to hear that you refer to this as being moderate. We took a very intensive look at this, and especially for our CEO, it is very moderate what it is that we're doing. And we are going to look at the total remuneration policy of the company. We're also going to include sustainability targets. And if all goes well, we will be commenting on that next year. Not entirely 100% sure, but we will attempt to do so. There were further questions. There was a question over there. Ladies first. Good afternoon. My name is Saskia Verbunt. I'm here on behalf of the Association of Investors in Sustainable Development, the VBDO. As VBDO, this year, obviously, we read your annual report, as Mr. van der Graat said. Indeed, we saw that there are major strides forward regarding transparency and sustainability. A framework has been developed. Non-financial information has been included in the financial reporting system. And these are developments that we, as VBDO, applaud, for which we would like to compliment you on behalf of the ASN Bank as well, these developments. On the other hand, we do know that, and you know, that we are not easily pleased. So we do have a couple of questions. The first question relates to the report. We have seen that there are KPIs, and we're very pleased with that, but we would really like to have more quantitative information regarding the quantitative targets and the results that have been achieved. Our second question concerns human rights, which is very close to the core business of Randstad. In 2011, the OECD guidelines have been revised, and there's a special chapter on human rights, and we would like to hear from you how Randstad is following these developments and what this specifically means to Randstad, what the impact is. And we would also like to hear from you, in terms of human rights, what the extensive operations in emerging countries such as India and China are and what this entails. Sometimes other risks are involved, and we'd like to hear more from you. So how do you deal with these increasing risks in these emerging countries? And we also have a question concerning energy consumption and energy supply. We realize full well that Randstad's core business is people, but it's an important subject because you have locations and branches all over the world. At your head office, you're doing a good job, you're taking specific measures, but in your annual report, we don't see enough progress and ambition regarding energy consumption and energy supply, your targets, what you wish to achieve, how you're going to go about it. So we would like to hear from you whether you intend to report more on this. And we also have another question on the Carbon Disclosure Project. This is a project with more than 500 institutional investors that are trying to get companies to reduce their carbon footprint, and Randstad has answered questions of the Carbon Disclosure Project, and this year you have a score of 50 out of 100. Well, there's room for improvement. And we'd like to hear from you how you intend to achieve this improvement, if you intend to achieve it. Last question concerns remuneration policy. As has been highlighted by Martijn Heiler just now, we would like to hear from you whether you intend to incorporate sustainability targets in your remuneration. Last year, we gave you our publication in this respect, and you said that you would take a close look at it, and we genuinely hope that you will progress quicker than this past year. So perhaps you could be a bit more specific in this respect. Thank you for now. Yes, I shall take the first question. I'll start from the beginning now. More quantitative, that's what you said. That was your first comment. This is what I jotted down. That's indeed what we are working on, and you will indeed see progress. Your other question concerned markets where we may be dealing with human rights situations, human rights that may be complied with in a different way. In this respect, Randstad is really working very hard. I must say that for a long time, in any case, for as long as I've been with the business, since 2001, my colleagues for much more time, we don't really distinguish between the markets. We have a number of principles, and we comply with those principles wherever we do business. And indeed, in some countries, we are facing things that we feel are just not possible, should not be happening, so we don't. So in upcoming markets, in emerging markets, we do things differently because we focus on the top side of the market. So dynamics that may well apply to the bottom side of the market, I don't know, are dynamics that we don't really face. In general, we are dealing with people who have been educated at a bachelor or master level. So this as far as human rights are concerned. And then you proceeded to energy supply. In our company, Randstad finds it very difficult, and so do all of us, members of the executive board, to apply structures that don't really fit us properly. And in my presentation, I already indicated that 95% of what we do and what we spend goes to people. So with all due respect, it is indeed very important, but in terms of energy supply and energy consumption, at the head office, well, we have shared information on that. It's only relevant if we can share it for the entire world, and we don't have that on our priority list. We're going to deal with the other issues first, and afterwards we shall address this because it is a subordinate point in our spend. And the same applies for the Carbon Disclosure Project. We have thousands of offices across the world, and if we really have to line everybody up in terms of this issue, we would be spending a lot of time on this issue, whereas we have other issues, and you'll be able to find that in the framework. It's a very honest answer. We understand your point. We know where you're coming from, but we are first going to address other issues on our priority list. Yes, indeed, it's very important, and we will be looking at remuneration policy in the second half of this year. particularly for our executive board, and we'll be taking this on board. I have said earlier on that in the long-term incentives, perhaps short-term incentives, we'll be taking it on board. But we don't know yet. It'll be discussed in the course of the year and next year. I'd like to respond very quickly because I do understand that other people wish to take the floor. One question that was not replied to was a question on the OECD guidelines of whether you've studied them. And yes, we have studied them. We actually have workshops that really focus on this issue. Good to hear. And furthermore, you said that energy is not at the top of your priority list. I would like to share with you that there are very accessible means, very accessible ways of mapping the situation. So that might help you get the figures that may be relevant. Okay. Thank you for the suggestion. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Well, I believe your name, please. My name is Robert Fraker, V-R-E-E-K-E-N. And I'm here as a shareholder on behalf of a number of other anonymous shareholders. We live in the richest country of Europe and one of the richest countries in the world. At this point in time, we have a AAA rating, which is important for Randstad. And what strikes me in this country, in any case, is that there's room for improvement. Randstad is underperforming in the Netherlands, if I'm not mistaken. And this is got to do with the shrinking margin that you have, but also with substantial competition. We have an increasing number of tenders where margins are reduced to zero. A couple of years ago, corporate accounts had margins of 15% and others had 25% margin. And so what we're facing now is that margins are being reduced to such an extent that you can hardly pay the salaries of your temporary workers, which means that temporary workers are enjoying lower pay. We have to pay too much in terms of pensions and healthcare, and especially if you look at the structure in Randstad. We want people to work longer, so it's important for people aged 40, 50, and 60 to be working for Randstad. Most people can work longer, and if they work longer, it'll cost our society less. In terms of communication of Randstad, and one of the other important points is that proactive communication of Randstad can be improved greatly. Mr. Notenboom is Supervisory Director of Ahold. Mr. Swartedek is also a member of the Supervisory Board of Ahold. Well, if Randstad were to communicate to the press as Ahold communicates to the press, we do a lot better in the Netherlands. Last week, I talked to Mr. Rino Kahn and also the chair of the trade union, FNV, Mr. Jongerius. And they can't really do very much, but Randstad can play a crucial role, can make sure that the elderly be involved in the labor market. That's very important because we want to keep pensions and healthcare affordable. That's the point I wanted to make. Perhaps you could share your views. Let's dispel misunderstandings. If we make less money, nothing will happen to the salaries, the wages of temporary workers. They're determined and laid down in the CLAs. So that's a given. Our variation is only to be found, well, should there be such a margin, I mean, in our own costs. That's very straightforward. And for our own employees, we also have collective labor agreements. So it's a miracle that we even make money. So I don't think it's that bad with the margin. That's a problem. But anyway, I do agree with you, however, that elderly employees should be working more. We do see an increase of unemployment, which to a great extent is being caused by the fact that there are more people entering and accessing the labor market, not so much to do with the fact that jobs are disappearing. Nobody ever says that in the newspapers. But when we had a very low unemployment rate, there was a problem with the companies accepting elderly workers. That's a nuisance, of course. We can't really afford not to accept older workers, but it's a temporary phenomenon because we're not going to have another option in the future. I referred to a demographic study that we conducted, and it's inevitable that more older people will have to work for a longer period of time. That's not the case now. It is indeed a problem. I agree with you, but things will change and we will be turning the tide. But we can only influence the market in to a certain extent. We're sort of broker between supply and demand, and we can only influence the market to a certain extent. In the past, we set up special units for elderly workers, but that wasn't an overwhelming success. But we do see that through the years that we see an increase of the average age of workers. Your last comment confuses me. Our salaries have been adopted. I don't think we should communicate as the supermarket chains of Ahold communicate. This week, two secretaries for the price of one, something like that. So I'm sort of struggling with that question. So it could be really complicated to advertise as Albert Heijn advertises supermarket chain of Ahold. Allow me to elaborate. If you look at the website, I believe the website said Randstad is looking for 215 bus drivers. Well, if you would communicate that on television, you'd see entirely different dynamics, because every day we read in the newspapers that pensions are doing poorly, that the economy is in a slump. But if, contrary to what politicians are doing, what newspapers are doing, if you communicate day after day, we need 300 bus drivers, or we need 800 other workers, if you do it like the supermarket chain Albert Heijn is doing, you'll see that the economy will be recovering rather quickly. I understand where you're coming from, but I also know that we will be facing a bankruptcy because we can't spend that much money. We can't afford to spend that money. But you always have to look at the objective that you have. We want to find the 250 bus drivers, but it would be a bit of a waste to communicate that to 16 million people. I mean, we do have a substantial marketing budget in the Netherlands, and we do communicate a lot, how many people we're looking for, what we're looking them for, so really trying to communicate properly. So Albert Heijn is in a different line of business. We're not going to copy them, but we're doing our best anyway. Question over there. Julia Rodriguez, my name. I'm an intermediary at the Light Supply and Randstad branch office. One of my customers is ABN AMRO, and I'm pleased to hear that you are focusing on sustainability. I myself have participated in the working group, the debate group, Sustainable Development, Corporate Social Responsibility for Randstad employees, and I'm pleased to hear that you are focusing on sustainability at this AGM. I'm looking forward to the numbers on measuring the number of people who are transferring to permanent jobs, from temporary work to permanent jobs with customers, and I'm also looking forward to hearing from you how this tallies with the commercial interests of Randstad. At the shop floor, I can tell you, we're not always pleased with mergers, people leaving their permanent contract for commercial reasons, and I would suggest that the initiatives that you're referring to here regarding sustainability be properly communicated to the branch offices so that we can communicate the vision of Randstad to our customers and our employees. Well, every year we get all the data of people transferring from temporary work to permanent work, and you'll be familiar with those figures. It's 25%. I'm sure you're familiar with that. But we're not unhappy when people transfer from temporary work to permanent jobs. Usually we get a fee for that, so there's no reason to be unhappy. And it would also mean that we would have linked the right person to the right job. So it's nothing to be unhappy about. And rolling out the sustainability across the company, it's something that we're working on. It's part of our training, and it's on the agenda of the general management meeting. So we address it at very frequent points in time. So this is something we are completely involved in, but we haven't started doing this a long time ago. So it's just it's a recent development. My name is Hussart. I believe that the supervisory board members should enjoy higher salaries, but the people who really make the money, they are not enjoying salary increases. Is that something you keep in mind? Wouldn't it be possible to globalize a bit more, to try to establish a collective labor agreement for supervisory board members. That way we would be able to keep a grip on expenses, on costs. There are supervisory directors who believe they're entitled to incentives, to bonuses. I think that we should dare to do so. I'm sure that Randstad is capable of doing this. Now that we are going through an economic crisis, Randstad could take the lead and do something about this so that we no longer need to pay bonuses and so that we can say that salaries have been laid down, and if you do your best, you can get a bit more, but if you don't do your best, you just get what we've agreed on. Because if employees on the shop floor, if they don't perform well, they'll be dismissed. But that doesn't happen to members of the supervisory board, and what are they called, members of the executive board, because they can arrange things for themselves. And by the way, it's the people who really make the money for you guys. Of course, you do work hard. I'm not saying that you're not working hard. But I think it would be better. I mean, this could be better communicated, and it would be easier for you to get along with the workers. Thank you for your comment. Are there any other questions over here, perhaps? Let me start with Mr. Stevens this time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to go back to the question of the elderly workers, here you are. I'm over the age of 65 and still very active. And I worked for Tempo Team 60 hours last week. This week I don't have as much time, but there you go. Well, you were talking about the government. In many countries, government accounts for 20-25% of the labor market. Well, we believe that this assumption is rather risky because governments are cutting and are becoming smaller. And we're very much in favor of that, by the way, that governments withdrawing and becoming smaller. So perhaps you should revise your position. I'd like to hear your view in this respect. The Iberian Peninsula. Portugal caught our eye. They did exceptionally well. And perhaps you can elaborate on Portugal. Now, the license. What about the licenses and the obligation to obtain a license? Have you progressed? We think it's a good thing because there are lots of parties acting in bad faith. We'd like to do away with them. So that's all I have to say, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stevens, I have a very disappointing piece of news for you, disappointing for ourselves as well. 20% of the working population works for government, but that doesn't apply to us. Many countries, the governments are closed off for us, and so there are only three countries in which we can substantially do business with the government, the Netherlands, UK, and the US. So for us, it's considerably less than 20%. So that in itself isn't that much of a problem, but these markets will be opening up if the government has to become more efficient. It'll be thinking more in business terms, and I'm sure you see this in the Netherlands. In any case, we all have to hand in our tax return before the 1st of April, and then there's an enormous increase of temporary workers at the revenue department in order to process all these tax returns. If the government would work more efficiently, they would be able to work with more temporary workers, and that would be in our interest. This is what we call simultaneous defense of interest. So that's excellent. I don't think you should be worried about the increased exposure. The exposure should become even greater. Most markets are still closed off for us, but except for those three markets. Portugal, my colleague, Mr. Lindelof, will say a few words about that. Indeed, Mr. Stevens, Portugal is a wonderful country, but we also have a wonderful business there, very enthusiastic group of people. We've been a market leader, 35% for years and years, and we're able to generate growth there, and they're very active also in structuring the temporary market in Portugal. They're a very active lobbying system, and they're really very visible. financially, they don't really have a lot of scope. But thank you for the compliment, and I shall, in any case, pass on your compliments to the colleagues in Portugal. The licenses and the problem of the illegal temporary work agencies, we're not pleased with that. That's an understatement. For years, we've been trying to draw attention to the problem through Randstad and the ABU to get the government to become involved, and the minister said that they will be more forthcoming and will act against the illegal temporary staffing agencies. They're tarnishing our sector. The license system is a way to proceed in this direction, and we wouldn't be opposing it in any case, but that's the situation. Mrs. Svarta, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I would like to go back to the UK. I read that at the front office you've integrated, very good for the marketing budget, that you are integrating the front office, but the back office and the integration of back offices, you still have a long way to go. My question, therefore, is how much time do you need for that? And another question is, how much time will the market give you to do that? Because in the UK, of course, Adecco Manpower is much bigger in the UK, but we're a layperson here. Don't you think that you will be in such a disadvantaged position that you won't be able to make up for the lost time if you take too long? Second question, Mr. Chairman, concerns the Netherlands. The analyst meeting, I read that you were speaking of a gap between Tempo Team and Randstad in the Netherlands. While that gap has existed for a while, stabilized, and then became a little bit smaller, you had dismissed 130 people at management level. That's what I read. And what's going on there, and how do you see the distinction between Tempo Team and Randstad? You may have commented on that in the past, but I would like to hear a bit more about it. My last question is a financial question for Mr. van der Kratz. You can impair, that is according to IFRS, goodwill, and the balance sheet is exceeding your shareholders' equity. In the past, we had a problem with that, but if you would be able to impair it, you'd have a negative equity. Is this something that worries you, something you want to do something about, or do you think that it's just a consequence of IFRS and in practice we're not worried about it because we are much more focused on the leverage ratio, which is below 2? Those are my questions for this round of questions.
I'm afraid not in Dutch. The back office project is ongoing. We expect to have the staffing back office fully integrated by the end of this year, perhaps into the first quarter of next year, with the balance of the business coming in during the following year. Those are, I think, cautious timescales and ones that we are confident that we can achieve. In terms of our performance against the market, you're quite right, it isn't good enough. I think the integration was probably the most complex one of the whole Vedior group. Over 30 opcos in the UK, moving from a very decentralized, entrepreneurial, federal kind of structure to a much more centralized corporate structure. And I think we're kind of squeezed in the middle between the two positions of the two companies. Having said that, as Ben alluded to, we've had a change of emphasis over the last 6-9 months. We've got a new management team, and there's some good work being done, which we expect to see the fruits of during the course of this year.
De kloof tussen Randstad en Nederland.
The gap between Randstad and the Netherlands. What we meant to say is that Randstad Netherlands is outperforming the market in terms of growth, and Tempo Team isn't really doing that well. And that in itself isn't something that we lose sleep over. 40% of the market figures are ourselves, so it's very difficult to deviate from that. Extraordinary things will have happened in the world, and I'm sure you will have read about it in the newspapers. But Tempo Team isn't growing as quickly as Randstad Netherlands. That is a fact, and that has two causes. First of all, exposure. Tempo Team had more government-related revenue, and that has been more than halved. So that has had a great impact on the company. Second, the customer mix. And third, I don't think that we've really focused enough on SME. So we are working on that one right now. So slowly but surely, we'll be correcting that. Our cost, 130 FTEs, you're quite right. It's always a very sad operation. We try to avoid that. But it was necessary. And the ratio, government operations, that ratio had reached an imbalance. And we had to correct for that. Your last question was whether we or I am worried about the ratio value of the goodwill and shareholders' equity. Well, I think economically there's only one thing you can do. If you buy a company, you want to buy value, and that the value is reflected in your balance sheet is obvious. So it's not a worry for us. And you're referring really to solvency of the company. In terms of solvency, we obviously look at the ratio, operational cash flow and debt. We're very much focused on that, and I think this is generally accepted. And that is how we manage the company. And the fact that goodwill exceeds equity is something we're not losing any sleep over. Are there any other questions? Ah, there's a question here.
Dat gaat over de bezoldiging van bestuur.
It was about remuneration of executive and supervisory board members in building blocks in the annual report. I read that you want the best people, so in my view it means we need the best people over here, and I think we have them. And if you look at KPN and ING, Schepe Bauer used to be there, Homer is there now, those are the best people, and if they cost 5 to 10 million euros at a certain point, then you need to be willing to pay that price, because you see what's happening at TNT Posting and KPN. If you don't have the best people, then the company goes down the drain. As for the supervisory board, that board needs to make every effort possible. It's important that they receive a fee of 50 or 100,000 euros. And in addition, they should receive an hourly fee, because if Randstad, and it's not so bad at Randstad, but Ahold and ING were a different case, if a recession hits, they need to work day and night, and they need to crunch those numbers after the fact, too. They need to do postmortems. And in the world, we have 1,000 casinos and banks, and we have 100 casinos in countries. Nobody can predict what will happen. It's important for the supervisory board to be able to devote a lot of time and to invoice this time. So that may mean that for 10 or 20 or 30 weeks, they may be having to bill 80 hours. Well, we'll consider it. It's a good suggestion. Now, can we wrap this up? Or does anybody have any more questions? I see another hand raised back there. Good afternoon. I'm Leon van Gorkum. And what I'd like to know is, lately, there's been a lot of speculating about that the Netherlands might abandon the euro or that the euro might collapse. How will this affect Randstad, both good and bad, and what measures is Randstad taking for this should it come to pass? Well, I've seen only one real study by the ING. Basically, it's a horror scenario, and in the Netherlands, that means that all pension funds would drop below 80% coverage, and there's some people here where the color of their hair suggests that they may already be retired and receiving a pension. That's going to drop. Suppose the export drops by 50% and our unemployment figures rise by 300,000 here, in Germany by 1 million. Those are some of the figures that we tried. That would be a disaster. And we took a look about if that happened, and I confirm that this is a disaster scenario, and the people who are talking about this haven't given it a lot of thought, in my view. If Greece and Portugal had to leave, and those are the most likely candidates, if something does happen, then the damage for Randstad would be manageable. There would be some damage, and the working capital is still an issue there, would be paid by the group in euros, and it wouldn't be recovered in euros. So there would be tens of millions of damages, but that won't alter the identity and nature of the firm. We've also performed a fairly detailed analysis so that if it does come to pass, we have an idea of what where we stand in Greece and Portugal, where we have few operations and did well last year anyway, so that we know what we need to consider first and not so that we don't start thinking about it at that point. I have two comments. I saw the car fleet of the executive board, in Frontier, and I see that they had some electric cars. I hope that next year two executive board board members will be driving a Tesla, because that goes a lot faster and it's very quiet. And that gentleman who's very active and still works at Tempo Team, I wish he would appear in the Tempo Team commercial. And it's perhaps we could coin some jobs and call them goldsmating jobs. Mr. Goldsmating is present, and if we can achieve a huge market share actively and call them goldsmating jobs instead of milker jobs, I think that would be an excellent alert to the members of the government. Perhaps you'd like to give that one some thought. Are there any other questions or comments? If not, then I note that there are no additional questions, and we'll move on to agenda item 2B, which is the adoption of the annual accounts for 2011. You'll find these on pages 98 through 148 of the annual report, and Robert Jan van der Kratz has elaborated that in detail. Does anybody have additional questions about the financial statements or the auditor's opinion on page 149? You didn't have the floor yet, so you'll get the floor first, sir. We have our mobile microphone speeding toward you. Mr. Chairman, are they joking here? Mr. Chairman, I'm Mr. Bohm. I have a question about taxes. Mr. von der Kratz mentioned something about that. It's primarily about 020 on page 21. You reported the fortunate fact that apparently you have managed to release SFN's valuation allowance. Do I understand correctly that SFN was acquired with the deferred tax balance, but the value correction that you managed to release to the tune of about $50 million? That's one, a deferred tax liability. Is that everything, or does anything remain at SFN? And is that included in the amount on page 21 in excess of $40 million? Of the amount that is not included on the balance sheet. Well, it's always nice if people examine the section of the annual report that we devoted the most effort to. That's this section.
So that the combination van de...
Yes, the combination of Randstad plus SFN in the U.S. has a larger earnings capacity than Randstad or SFN individually. So we considered that combination together when we examined potential compensation for past losses. That's why a larger share of those losses was valued. There was a provision, and we reduced that provision. And now we're basically where we want to be. That pretty much covers it. We're always a bit cautious about that because it increases the company's volatility. It means that if the prospects deteriorate, you not only get items such as the Sun, the P&L, but you also address such items because you might recover them or compensate them. So it's not necessarily an auspicious trend. And what you did now amounted to about $50 million, and that carried over to your results and to all indicators based on your net results and dividend. Well, the most important indicators are pre-tax, but if you do carry taxes over, that counts too. And for your information, these items are being released now. And imagine if the prospects deteriorate over time, then you could address this vice versa. That's the way the regulations are today. Mr. Chairman, my first question concerns page 119. You mentioned the sensitivity analysis. It's been in there for a few years, but it caught my attention this year, saying that the France and you say that in France they have sufficient headroom in light of the sensitivity analysis. Does that mean that the margins you mentioned in the sensitivity analysis of 1 and 2%, et cetera, that you'll see what the maximum is and see if any headroom remains, or did you address those individually? This question is fairly technical, but if you're talking about sufficient, the UK last year was still listed as having sufficient headroom, but apparently there wasn't. The sensitivity analysis reflects the value of the goodwill, for the record, because we have a far more important sensitivity analysis about the possible course of the result. This is only about the goodwill, and we've examined the influence of different factors intrinsically, but if you combine them, that wouldn't take us into a danger zone. But it's very dangerous to combine, because if something deteriorates, then it's unlikely that other things won't be affected. So if the gross margins drop, then of course we're going to cut costs. So that's why it's dangerous to add factors up, because one will always force you to address another one to adjust your course in the firm. My second question is about the auditor on page 129. You mention audit fees and provide a list. What I don't understand, are all audit costs invoiced by PwC justified, or all corporate finance type costs combined of other firms that work for you as well? Our structure is fairly simple. We do business as much as possible with a single auditor, and if you look at this very carefully, this reflects the group audit in all local statutory audits. This is because the executive board usually manages local firms. We're based in 40 countries, so we want PwC as a firm, with one or two exceptions, but otherwise it's PwC for the group as a whole. If you were to look at the group audit alone, then it would equal about 1 or 2 million, I estimate. But much of this amount concerns the local statutory audits, which, with one or two exceptions, I think there's one tiny one in India, that's done by PwC. And they're listed there too. And with other audit firms. That was the second line. Since we're talking about your audit anyway, the auditor writes a management letter once a year, and I would like the auditor to tell me whether the management letter mentioned any topics that are relevant for the interests of shareholders. Well, it depends on what you deem relevant. We could talk about the firm until the cows come home. It's basically an excellent report. But there were no remarks that the audit committee thought were worth communicating to the shareholders specifically. So there are no special remarks that from the perspective of the audit committee were relevant to bring specifically to the shareholders' attention. Thank you. Any more questions, comments? And there don't appear to be any. In that case, I find that there are no more questions, and I propose adopting the annual accounts for 2011. I'm giving the floor to our secretary Yella Miedema to walk you through the voting procedure. This time I'm going to say a bit about the voting procedure. If you haven't done this yet, please insert your voting pass into the top of your voting box with the gold chip facing you. And if you don't have a voting box yet, one of our hostesses will bring you one. You may keep the voting card inside the voting box throughout the meeting. I would like the voting operator to activate the voting system, and these are the options for casting your vote. If you support a proposal, so select 1. If you oppose the proposal, select 2. And if you wish to abstain from the vote, then select option 3. If you do not select one of the options, your vote won't be counted and will be regarded as not having been cast.
And what the uitslag?
After a few seconds, I'll mention that the vote is now closed and the results will be projected on the overhead. We're not going to conduct a trial vote this time, but we'll proceed directly to voting on agenda item 2B, proposal to adopt the financial statements for 2011. Please cast your vote. Option 1 is in favor of the proposal, option 2 is against, and option 3 is abstention. Please cast your vote.
Dan is de stemming nu gesloten.
The vote is closed. And you'll see the results of the vote on the overhead, and you'll see that 100% of the votes were cast in favor, 0% against, although there were 4,820 votes, and 21,400 abstentions. So it works. That's 100% is an excellent result. It couldn't be any better. So I ascertained that we've adopted the financial statements for 2011 with 100% of the vote. On to agenda item 2C, explanation of the policy on reserves and dividends. Mr. von der Kratz already elaborated on that. Does anybody have any questions? If there are no additional questions, that takes me to agenda item 2D, the proposal to determine the dividend. This item has been explained in detail as well. The dividend payment on preference shares class B equals 0.284 euros per share in line with our dividend policy. It is proposed to pay a cash dividend of 1.25 euro per ordinary share. And this payment will be minus 15% dividend tax that will be withheld. The date for notation of ex-dividend is upcoming to April. The payment will be made available entirely in cash on 19 April. Does anybody have any questions? No? Well, then I ascertain that there are no more questions, and I propose adopting the dividend. I'll give the floor back to Jelle Miedema. Please express your selection by selecting one of the options. 1 is in favor, 2 is opposed, and 3 is abstain. And you please cast your vote. The vote is closed, and you'll see the results on the overhead.
En u ziet dat 100% van de stemmen heeft.
As you'll see, 100% of the votes have been cast in favor, and 0% opposed, and there were 21,350 abstentions.
Het resultaat, en daarmee is het.
So 100% is the result, and that means that the dividend has been adopted. With 100%, 0.00%, incredible. That takes to agenda item 3A, discharge of liability for the members of the executive board for the management. The general meeting of shareholders will discharge the members of the executive board for their management in 2011. To the extent that this is clear from the financial statements and the annual report and the other documents presented to the annual general meeting and the explanation provided at this meeting. Are there any questions? We have a question here.
Ik heb even een vraag aan de accountant.
Question for the auditor. course, the auditor has been at several major companies and knows what goes wrong where. What can Radstad learn from other companies, can learn with respect to other companies, and how can we avert problems for Randstad? That's already been said. There was a management letter, and that management letter was explained by the chairman of the audit committee, and we didn't receive any additional feedback from the auditors, except for what was in their management letter in writing. Very well. Are there any other questions? Well, please cast your vote by choosing your selection. One is in favor of discharge, two is against discharge, and option three would be to abstain. Please cast your vote.
En dan sluit ik nu de stemming.
The vote is now closed. And you'll see the results on the overhead. According to the results, 99.62% voted in favor, 0.38% voted against discharge. Well, that's nearly 100%, but not quite. But it's nonetheless been adopted, so the discharge has been granted. That takes us to agenda item 3B. And I hope there will be improvement granting discharge from liability to the members of the supervisory board for their supervision of the management. I propose that following the general meeting of shareholders grant discharge to the supervisory board for their supervision of the management in the financial year 2011 as apparent from the financial statements, the annual report, and other documents presented to the general meeting and the clarifications given during the meeting. Does anybody have any questions? No? Then I will give the floor back to Mr. Miedema. Please cast your vote again by pressing selection of your choice. Option one is in favor, option two is against, and option three is abstention. You may now cast your vote. The vote is now closed, and the result will be projected on the screen, and you'll see that 99.61% has voted in favor, 0.39% has voted against the discharge. Thank you. So it's been adopted by nearly 100%, 99.61. That takes us to agenda item 4. Composition of the executive board. At the end of this general meeting, Greg Methlin will step down from the executive board. For personal reasons, he has requested not to be reappointed and will be leaving Randstad in the course of this year to move closer to home and devote his time to other activities. Greg, on behalf of the supervisory and executive boards, I'm deeply grateful for your contribution to Randstad over the past 4 years, especially in North America, and I wish you both personally and professionally all the best for the future.
That kommen wij tot agenda punt.
That takes to agenda item 4A, proposal to reappoint Mr. Wilkinson as members of the executive board. At the end of this general meeting of shareholders, Brian Wilkinson will step down from the executive board as his first 4-year term has expired. He is available for reappointment. His CV appears in the agenda to this meeting. Brian Wilkinson has contributed to the executive board, especially given his many years of experience in the UK staffing and recruitment industry. He is presently responsible for the United Kingdom, Australia, and New Zealand, the Middle East, India, Malaysia, Singapore, and China. The supervisory board proposes reappointing him for a second 4-year term. Are there any questions? Would anybody like the floor? Yes, sir.
Ja, de naam is Bruning.
I'm Mr. Bruning. I'm a bit surprised that this gentleman travels globally so much. Wouldn't it be better to cluster it by regions? Well, we all travel worldwide, so that needn't be a problem. We have management in Asia Pacific there in Singapore, so there's limited contact, but we're quite a hands-on management and board, so we have lots of operations reporting to us, and most of our work consists of site and customer visits, and that means that sometimes we spend a night on the plane, and that certainly holds true for Mr. Wilkinson if he travels to Australia, which, of course, he doesn't do every month. I understand your concern. We appreciate that very much, but Mr. Wilkinson is physically in excellent shape, if that's any comfort to you. Very well. Are there any other questions or suggestions? Very well. Then we'll proceed with the vote. Well, you may express your choice by pressing 1 in favor, 2 against, or 3 to abstain from the vote. Please cast your vote.
En dan is de stemming gesloten. En
the vote is now closed, and you'll see the results on the screen, and you'll see that 99.94% voted in favor of the proposal to reappoint, 0.06% against.
Okay, dus ook weer met bijna 100% aangenomen.
So once again carried by almost 100%. Congratulations. Gret Netland will be succeeded on the executive board by Linda Gallego. So, on agenda item 4B, we see the proposal to appoint Ms. Gallipo as member of the executive board. Mrs. Gallipo, Linda Gallipo, was born in Canada, where she obtained an MBA in marketing and management. Since 1995, she's been working for Randstad in the United States, where she has had an excellent career, and she is was in charge of operations in Canada, expanding the business from scratch to becoming a strong market leader. Since 2008, she's been president of Randstad Staffing in the USA and has figured prominently in integrating the recently acquired SFN. We're delighted that we can strengthen our ranks with this person who has a strong and excellent track record within Randstad. Her CV appears in the agenda to this meeting. The supervisory board proposes appointing Linda Gallipo to a first four-year term, and she'll be responsible for the United States, Canada, and Mexico. By appointing her to the executive board, the most important elements in her employment contract are in line with the remuneration policy for the executive board and the corporate governance code as appearing in the agenda. Linda Gallipo is present here today. Would you please rise, Linda? Linda, would you please rise? This is Linda Gallipo. Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mevrouw.
Goedemiddag, mijn naam is Rachel.
Good afternoon. I'm Rachel Heine of the Association of Investors for Sustainable Development. Both in the annual report and in the presentation, you've considered the social matter of sustainability, diversity on the work floor as part of this. There are therefore two reasons why I'm delighted at this appointment. First, because it's a very positive change in the diversity of this executive board. And second, I'm delighted that talent is receiving an opportunity at Randstad, that somebody from our own ranks is fortunate enough to receive this position. Thank you. I agree entirely. Now, we'll proceed with the vote. Please cast your vote. Select 1 to vote in favor, select 2 to vote against, and select 3 to abstain. Please cast your vote.
de uitslag.
Is now closed and you'll see the outcome on the overhead. With 99.94% of the votes were cast in favor of the proposal.
Congratulations, Linda, and welcome. We gaan over naar agenda punt 5.
On to agenda item 5, composition of the supervisory board. At the end of this general meeting of shareholders, Rob Swartendijk will resign as member of the supervisory board because his third and final four-year term has expired. Rob, I'd like to say a few words to you. You were appointed to the supervisory board in 1999 and remained in this position for 13 years. We benefited enormously from your expertise as a thorough professional, your knowledge and experience on the U.S. market, and your professionalism as a board member at several top-rate firms. We regard your contribution to our strategy committees and on the supervisory board as of immense value and are grateful that you served on our team. You had the entire confidence of our founder and colleague, Fritz Goldschmeding. Last but not least, you're a very pleasant person. Therefore, it's very difficult for us to say goodbye to you, to let you go, but rules are rules. On behalf of the executive and supervisory boards, I thank you, Rob. We'll miss you, and we wish you all the best in the future. It was a pleasure and an honor, and it's a wonderful company.
Okay, bedankt Rob.
Thank you, Rob.
Gaan we over tot agenda.
That takes us to agenda item 5A, proposals to reappoint Mrs. Hudson as member of the supervisory board. At the end of this general meeting of shareholders, Beverly Hudson will step down as member of the supervisory board since her first four-year term has expired. She is eligible for reappointment. You'll find her curriculum vitae in the agenda. Beverly Hudson has delivered a valuable contribution to the supervisory board and has served on the Remuneration Nomination Committee. In accordance with the Articles of Association and the profile, the supervisory board proposes reappointing her as member of the supervisory board for a second four-year term. Are there any questions or suggestions? If not, we'll proceed with the vote, and you may select 1 to vote in favor of the reappointment. To vote against, press 2, press 3 to abstain. Please cast your vote.
The stemming is by days.
Vote is closed. And you will find the results on the screen. 99.96% has voted in favor of the proposal. The proposal is carried. Beverly, congratulations. Almost 100%. Now we can proceed to item 5C, proposal to reappoint Mr. Giscard d'Estaing as a member of the supervisory board. At the end of this general meeting of shareholders, Henri Giscard d'Estaing will be stepping down as a member of the supervisory board since his first term of 4 years has expired. He's eligible for reappointment. His curriculum vitae can be found in the agenda of the meeting. Henri Giscard d'Estaing has made a valuable contribution to the supervisory board and its strategy committee. In accordance with the profile in the Articles of Association, the Supervisory Board proposes to reappoint Mr. Giscard d'Estaing as a member of the Supervisory Board for a second four-year term. Are there any questions or remarks? If not, we can proceed to the vote. If you press 1, you will vote in favor. Reappointment 2 is opposed, and 3 is abstention. And I hereby open the vote. Vote is closed, and we will find the results on the screen. And you can see that with 99.17%, the meeting has carried the proposal.
Voorstel aangenomen.
Proposal carried. This brings us to 5C, proposal to appoint Mr. Dekker as a member of the supervisory board. Bout Dekker is a Dutch national. He's 55 years old, and he's had an impressive career at Nutreco, where he's been a member of the executive board for 16 years, and 12 years he was chairman and CEO of the business, and we expect to benefit from his extensive experience, and it is our pleasure to propose him as a member of the supervisory board. You will find the curriculum vitae of Mr. Dekker on the agenda. In accordance with the Article of Association and its profile, the supervisory board proposes to appoint Mr. Wout Dekker as a member of the supervisory board for a first 4-year term. Mr. Dekker is also here with us today. Please rise. Are there any questions, comments, perhaps? Yes, Saskia Verbent, once again, the VBDO, Association for Sustainable Investment. As VBDO, we would very much like to support Mr. Dekker's appointment within Nutreco. Mr. Dekker has really focused on sustainability, and we genuinely hope that his experience in this respect be taken on board in Randstad. Thank you very much for your comment. Are there any further comments? Brunnik is my name. What is Mr. Dekker going to do? What is he going to focus on specifically in the board? He's going to become boss of the strategy committee, supervisory director and head of the strategy committee. Chairman. Right, shall we vote? We shall vote. If you press 1, you vote in favor, 2, you vote against, and 3 is abstention. I hereby open the vote. And I hereby close the vote. And you will find the results on the screen. And with a majority of 99.93%, the proposal has been carried. Congratulations and welcome. This brings us to item 6 of the agenda, proposal to extend the authority of the Executive Board to issue shares. It is proposed that, subject to the approval of the Supervisory Board, the Executive Board be the designated body authorized to issue shares and grant share subscription rights. This authorization will apply for a period of 18 months from the date of this annual general meeting of shareholders, that is up till and including September 29, 2013. The issue will mainly be for the purposes of senior management and executive board stock option and share plans. The actual annual grant of performance-related shares and options will, in principle, not exceed the 1% of ordinary issued capital in the form of ordinary shares. Nonetheless, the grant for the benefit of unconditional shares and options to be exercised in a specific year exceeds the 1% limit. So this is to do with the share price. And for this reason, the annual maximum authorization is 3% of the ordinary issued share capital of the company. Are there any questions? No further questions. We shall proceed to the vote. Once again, if you press 1 is in favor, 2 is against, and 3 is abstention. And I hereby open the vote. And I hereby close the vote. And on the screen, you will find the results of the vote. 98.28% has voted in favor of the proposal. With that, we will proceed to 6B of the agenda, proposal to extend the authority of the 6B, says the chairman, proposal to extend the authorization of the executive board to to restrict or exclude the preemptive right to any issue of shares. You can also read the explanation of this proposal on the agenda. It is proposed that, subject to the approval of the Supervisory Board, the Executive Board be the designated body authorized to restrict or exclude the preemptive right to any issue of shares. This authorization will apply for a period of 18 months from the date of this Annual General Meeting of Shareholders until and including September 29, 2013, and will also be limited to an annual maximum of 3% of ordinary issued share capital of the company. Are there any questions? Since there are no questions, we can proceed to the vote. Once again, option 1 is in favour, 2 is opposed, 3 is abstention. I hereby open the vote. Close the vote and you will find the results of the vote on the screen. 99.48% has voted in favour of the proposal. Very well. Item 7 of the agenda, proposal to appoint Mr. Fancula as Director A of the Trust Office, the Stichting Administratie Kantoor Preferent and the Randstad Holding. In accordance with the Articles of Association of the Trust Office for Preference Shares, Randstad Holding, the Foundation, or the Trust Office, we propose to appoint Mr. Sjoerd Fancula as Director A of its board. His curriculum vitae can be found on the agenda. Executive Board of Randstad Holding NV, with the support of the Supervisory Board, proposes to appoint Mr. Fancula as Director A, taking into account his wide range of experience in executive as well as supervisory roles, notably in financial institutions. The proposed appointment is for a four-year period until the General Meeting of Shareholders in 2016. Mr. Fancula, unfortunately, could not attend today's meeting. Are there any questions? Comments, perhaps? If not, we can proceed to a vote. And once again, if you press 1, you're in favour, 2 against, 3 is abstention, and I hereby open the vote. Vote is closed, and you'll find the results on the screen. 99.91% has voted in favour of the proposal, and the proposal has been carried. Thank you. We can now move on to item 8 of the agenda, proposal to reappoint PricewaterhouseCoopers as external auditor for the financial year 2013. Pursuant to Article 393, Book 2 of the Dutch Civil Code, the General Meeting of Shareholders instructs an auditor with the task of auditing the annual the financial statements. In its meeting held on March 31st, 2011, the General Meeting of Shareholders instructed PricewaterhouseCoopers in the Netherlands to audit the financial statements for the reporting years 2011 and 2012. The latter was subject to the Audit Committee's prior approval regarding the performance and fee proposal of PricewaterhouseCoopers, which approval has now been given. Since PricewaterhouseCoopers is performing its assignment to full satisfaction, the Executive Board, with the support of the Supervisory Board, proposes to instruct PricewaterhouseCoopers in the Netherlands to audit the financial statements for the next reporting year 2013. Are there any questions? That not being the case, we can once again proceed to the vote. Option 1 is in favour. Option 2 is opposed. 3 is abstention. And I hereby open the vote. I hereby close the vote, and on the screen you will see that the proposal has been carried with 99.65%. Thank you. We move on to item 9, remuneration of the supervisory board. The remuneration of the members of the supervisory board consists of a fixed annual payment, which is not dependent upon Randstad's performance and is determined by the general meeting of shareholders. The current annual allowance was determined by the annual general meeting held in 2007. Over the past few years, the chairman and the members of the supervisory board have spent much more time in their work on this board, for which reason it is proposed to increase the annual fees as follows. For the chairman, from 90,000 to 110,000, for the members, 60,000 to 75,000, and also to introduce a fee for the vice chairman, the deputy chairman, of 90,000. Are there any questions, sir? Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the VEB, Association of Stockholders, when you speak of the salaries of your employees and members of the board, you work with a peer group and you always refer to Towers Watson. Did you do that for this proposal? And who's part of the peers group? Same as the executive board. They're all foreign firms, the chairman. We always do this, what we call sanity check with the Dutch listed companies, AEX listed companies, so we compare with the AEX and with foreign companies. Supervisory board, by the way, is very international. Yes, but we also have a different system. It's a two-tier system, and in those benchmarks, you very often have one-tier systems. Well, in German, for instance, you also have two-tier boards, Austria, France, in part, as well. But you mainly compare with AEX listed companies and which companies are part of your peer group. Well, we compare with the peer group and then we do a sanity check with Dutch companies and they always look at similar companies in the Netherlands. Insofar as we can see, and we can see reasonably well, I believe it's Unilever and Shell, they're one-tier boards. But if we exclude those companies, you would score the highest of all the others in the peer group. And how do you justify this for Randstad? Because you are simply a good, excellent AEX company. But we believe that you're exceeding the norm here. But as I said, we look around in the Netherlands and we take into account what the developments are in the Netherlands and we talk to our consultants and you will see that remuneration increases. It has been said earlier on. It involves a lot of work, a lot of responsibility, and remuneration in this country is relatively low for these positions and you will see that it will be increasing across the board, especially if you look at the international situation, remuneration is very low. Yeah, but indeed, other companies will now say, well, just look and see what Randstad is doing. Let's increase our remuneration. But for the work we do here, I must say it is not a whole lot of money, really. Well, Chairman, I won't disagree with you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, my foundation also worries about this. The number of members of the audit committee are increasing, the remuneration committee. So my foundation find it very difficult to stomach all these increases. Well, perhaps we can learn from the ING. At the AGM of ING, the benchmarks are shown on the screen. So they point out that Jan Hommer, the CEO, earned very little, relatively. Same applies to the supervisory board. And if you do that with several companies, you can just avoid these discussions. And I think it's a good idea to also include American and British businesses, perhaps also from Hong Kong and China, because that's an entirely different world. Here we talk about cost, but in China and India, they keep talking about making money. So the more they make, the more the employees will make. And it's not for nothing that Audi, Mercedes, and BMW are growing so rapidly in China. Thank you. Any other questions? Very well, we can proceed to the vote. You can press 1 if you're in favor of the proposal, 2 if you're opposed, and 3 is an abstention. And I hereby open the vote. And I close the vote, and you will see that the proposal has been carried with 99.78% of the votes. Thank you. Well, this takes us to item 10. Any other business? Who can I give the floor? Not Mr. Stevens. The gentleman behind you, sorry, he was first. My name is Bruning. Last year, I asked you about your plans to install a windmill on the roof of your head office. It has been said before that it is not a core business for Randstad, but that's really all I know about this situation. There is a windmill on the roof. Apparently it makes a lot of noise, that's what we've been told. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have noted that next year you will be holding your meeting, your AGM, on the same date as New Tricker. Wouldn't it be possible to agree on a different date so that we don't have two meetings on the same day? But the AGM of New Tricker was last year, was the day before yesterday. Oh, yeah. No, but I'm referring to next year, 2013. Both will be held on the 28th of March. Ah, next year, says the chairman. Well, there's always going to be overlap with some other AGM. Yes, but it's so early in the year. There must be a possibility to find some sort of solution. Well, we'll check. Wait and see. The question is whether the same question was raised at the New Tricker meeting. What if we both choose a different date and end up having a meeting on the same date? Chairman, as far as what I said earlier on, you listened to me, but I'd like to be a bit sharper here. I would like to hear from you whether you're going to take into account what I said. I would expect that Randstad this year pay heed to what I said about bonuses and remuneration in order to improve its policy. And you can't just brush this aside like you did on many other occasions by saying, no, but the other companies have bigger increases. No, you should have the courage here in the Netherlands to do something about putting a stop to all these increases and all these incentives. It's not that I don't agree that you enjoy a salary, but not the salaries that we see nowadays. It's not congruent with what all the other people who work for you are making, and I'd like to hear an answer from you whether you would be prepared to do that. As we said, we shall take another close look at the remuneration policy in the second half of this year. Any other questions or suggestions? Sir. Well, perhaps it might be a good idea to conduct a benchmark on sustainability. It is becoming increasingly important. There's a windmill on the roof. I don't think that is a very good idea. Solar panels are a lot cheaper, don't make as much noise. ASN Bank, who is doing really very well with solar panels, it might be a good idea to place some solar panels on your roof. So Randstad could perhaps show us the benchmarks and its performance in terms of sustainability. It would really reassure the shareholders meeting. Well, I have pointed out that it is not a priority, not for us, not in our action plan. I said so earlier on. We have thousands of branch offices in the world, and we will first address other issues concerning sustainability. Okay, any other suggestions, comments? That not being the case, we've reached the end of this general meeting of shareholders. I would like to thank all of you for coming, for your attention, and it's a pleasure to invite you to have a drink and a bite to eat in the lobby. See you next year.